You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, lead water lines continue to be a growing concern in communities around Wisconsin. We'll check in about how the DNR is handling such a large-scale problem. First, the Trump presidency could have major impact. Trump appointed Justice Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court and has more than 100 vacancies to fill on the federal judiciary. One of his most recent nominations for a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago has ruffled some feathers. A progressive judicial watchdog group, the Alliance for Justice, has called on the Trump administration to withdraw its nomination of Amy Coney Barrett for the bench. The group says that Barrett has little litigation experience and says that she argues her Catholic religious views can precede U.S. law. Experts have also argued that the president's judicial nominations have gone in a more conservative partisan direction. Ryan Owens joins me now. He's a professor of political science and affiliate faculty in the law school at UW-Madison. Ryan, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks.
Why are some liberal groups wary of Notre Dame law professor Amy Coney Barrett?
Well, I think a lot of them see her as representative of a lot of the nominees that President Trump is trying to get on the court right now. Younger, conservative judges that have considerable clerkship experience and good credentials. I think they see her as a potential Supreme Court nominee in the future, were she to get on the Seventh Circuit. And I think they're going out of their way to try to attack her with this article that she wrote when she just got out of law school. I read the article this afternoon that she published, and frankly, I don't think that it's nearly as problematic as that group suggests it is.
The red flags for these groups who are concerned about her, one of them is that she says that the Bible could precede U.S. law, and the other is that a judge may not have to follow precedent or consider precedent if they disagree with the way the case was handled. Can you unpack those views for us and tell us what they mean?
So let's start with the first objection that they have first, and that is this notion of religious faith and the law. So in 1996, she wrote an article about Catholic judges and what ought Catholic judges to do when they face the death penalty. Now, ironically, she, in this article, opposes the death penalty. So you would think that progressive groups would want to see her on there. But what she argued in this article was that for Catholic judges who are particularly motivated by their religion, what they should do is when they see a conflict between their religion and what they're supposed to do under the law, they should consider recusing themselves. So it's not as though their religion should trump, at least this is her argument, that religion should trump the law, but rather if a judge finds himself or herself so motivated by their religious beliefs that they don't feel they can rule dispassionately in the case, that they should recuse themselves. So you can take that and turn it one way or the other. You can say that that means you're putting the Bible above the law. I think a lot of people would read that and suggest all it means is if you don't feel like you can apply the law fairly, you should recuse yourself in the case. And I'm certainly not going to defend her position or oppose it one way or the other, but I think that's the fairest reading of the article. Now, in terms of upholding or getting rid of precedent, this is a really age-old discussion that professors and others have. I think her argument here was that when it comes to constitutional cases, we should want judges and justices to feel a little bit less constrained by following precedent because the stakes are so much higher. And so if one particular legal vogue falls out of fashion and you get new judges or justices on the court, because this is such a big deal, because it speaks to notions of fundamental values in the country, that maybe we want judges to be able to rethink those precedents over time.
Precedents are not to be taken lightly, though, correct? In law, you're supposed to, they build on one another, and they reach a point where there is maybe a systemic societal change, as is with the gay marriage ruling recently like that, mm-hmm. or you saw it also happening in Roe versus Wade. So do you think that, I mean, it's possibly to be too dismissive of precedent?
Well, right. I mean, one of the fundamental values we strive for in the law is stability. That's one of the foundational concepts of the rule of law is stability and clarity. You and I ought to be able to know what is or isn't legal when we go about our daily lives. At the same time, though, a stubborn grip on an existing precedent can be problematic. You know, you mentioned Roe versus Wade. That, of course, was a new precedent. You think about Lawrence versus Texas, that overruled existing precedent. Brown versus Board of Education overruled Plessy. So, in adherence to precedent is certainly something we should treasure and something that we should value and not dismiss lightly, as you suggest. But at the same time, it's not something that ought to handicap us when it becomes obvious that the precedent needs to go. And that's more or less I don't want to say a policy dispute, but where that line is of course, in the eye of the beholder.
We're talking with Ryan Owens right now. He is an associate professor of political science and affiliate faculty in the law school at UW-Madison. And we're looking at a controversy around the Trump administration's nominee for a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which serves Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. And Ryan, I wanted to ask you about some of her criticisms. We looked at areas of faith when we started off, and she has criticized other judges on grounds of their faith and said perhaps they weren't the best executors of their Catholic faith. Is that something that you regularly see when you look at judges and their responses to one another?
Yeah, I mean, well, two things. First, that's not typically the kind of conversation we observe, from nominees. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, I read that article that she wrote in 1996, and I did not see that in there. I saw a discussion about Justice Brennan and some of his behaviors when he was on the court, but I didn't in any way get the sense that the authors were trying to disparage Brennan for his behavior at all. I went back and I double-checked that, tried to find it in there, and I didn't see it. Maybe I didn't look closely enough, but I didn't see it there. It's kind of a strange discussion about this nominee. Usually we're talking about different things. Do they support the death penalty or oppose it? This one, she clearly had opposed it. In the discussion here is a little different. Now, I should point out she wrote this article while she was clerking for Judge Silberman on the D.C. Circuit. She later went on to clerk for Justice Scalia on the Supreme Court and there worked on some death penalty cases. So it doesn't appear as though she would be recusing herself were she to become a judge in this matter, because she certainly didn't when she worked as a clerk on the Supreme Court.
Now, we've gotten at this a little bit, but the watchdog group that is opposing her nomination, the Alliance for Justice, has painted her as someone who is outside the pale when you look at the legal system, when you look at judges and lawyers. Tell us more. It sounds like you don't agree with that assessment. You think that it's not too far outside what might be considered normal, to use that term. What do you think? Is that fair?
Well, again, I'm not here to support or oppose her at all. I think what's going on here is that you have somebody who is a conservative jurist with very good credentials. Now, not much legal experience, but I and some others actually don't think that's particularly problematic. But she's got great credentials. She's highly qualified for this position, and I think they see her as a threat. And so what they're trying to do here is find anything they can to take her down now before she gets on that circuit and either renders decisions inconsistent with what they would like to see and or potentially becomes a Supreme Court, potential Supreme Court nominee herself. So I think that's what's going on here. Now, in terms of her jurisprudence and her discussions about precedent and the like, I think these are discussions that law professors have quite regularly. It's just most of them don't wind up being nominated to get on the federal circuits these days. And this is why, because a paper trail is something that can be examined by opponents and highlighted, and it can become problematic for the nominee. But I don't see the discussion that she's had as being, anything that ought to sink the nomination, at least on qualification grounds. Whether a senator opposes or agrees with her on policy grounds, that's an entirely different matter, and I certainly wouldn't speak to that. But in terms of the credentials, in terms of, the history and stuff there, I don't see this as something that's, objectively speaking, hugely problematic, but this is politics, right? And these things tend to take on a life of their own.
How important is an appointment like this in a federal appeals court? There are many of these vacancies across the country, and President Trump has potentially the opportunity to fill very many of them. I don't know if he'll get to all of them. He may. But let's look at this particular appointment. How important is it?
Well, this particular appointment, I think, is it's relatively important. I mean, the Seventh Circuit historically had been a little bit more conservative after the 80s and early 90s. And with President Obama's presidency, he was able to get a couple of more liberal-leaning judges on that circuit. So it's relatively close, I think, to balance right now. And if President Trump is able to get a couple of more conservative judges on that circuit, I think it'll be a little bit more balanced than it has been over the last few years.
There have been various news outlets reporting that the president has a big opportunity for his party to appoint conservative leading judges to the judiciary and taking that in a more conservative direction. Do you see that as being any different than what we might have seen for President Obama, or is this the opportunity of every sitting president?
Yeah, no, this is the opportunity of every sitting president. Now, some presidents get into this a little bit more than others. By all accounts, at least early on in his presidency, President Clinton didn't seem particularly motivated by judges and filling those appointments, whereas President Reagan was really concerned with that. You know, and for President Trump, he really hasn't had a whole lot of success so far. His primary success thus far has been his selection of Neil Gorsuch and getting him on the court. And so, you know, I think a lot of Republicans went to the polls in November and they plugged their noses and they voted for President Trump because this is what they were concerned with, the selection of judges and justices on the Supreme Court. And, you know, in that capacity, he's been very, very successful.
And just a couple of seconds left. Wisconsin Senators Ron Johnson, a Republican, Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat, recently renewed a bipartisan agreement in Wisconsin for a nominating commission to help fill judicial vacancies. Mm-hmm. Does it look as though that will be taken into account by the Trump administration?
Oh, I suspect it will, simply because, you know, Senator Johnson voluntarily took part in this commission. So I think they'll give that some respect. Certainly when you think about the fact that they'll need his vote in the health care bill and in other issues, I don't think they want to do anything to ostracize Senator Johnson. But we'll see how that commission proceeds. I mean, there's three Democrats, three Republicans on there, and I know they're busy right now vetting candidates, and I think they're probably nearing the end of that process, and we'll see what they wind up, who they wind up selecting.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Ryan Owens, professor of political science and affiliate faculty in the law school at UW-Madison, looking at a controversy around the Trump administration's nominee for a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which serves Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. This is Central Time.